This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another hour of old-time radio crime. We'll hear first this week from Rogues Gallery, their episode from June 6th, 1946, titled Blue Eyes. After that, it's Philo Vance and the Bulletin Murder Case, his story from October 5th, 1948.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. The F.W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo and Fitch's shaving creams, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. Call me a silly, impressionable boy if you want to. But when I first laid eyes on Patricia Flynn at that party, I was over the side like a Jacob's ladder. Her hair was as black as a lover's despair. Her eyes were the blue of the washed sky around a rainbow. And she was the feminine architecture what the atom bomb is to science. Ah, there's never been anything like it. I liked her, and she liked me. In fact, she seemed to be spending most of the evening trying to be alone with me. But another lovely, bless her, outmaneuvered her. The next day, I went to my office a little late. I was just sitting there at my desk trying to make my checkbook agree with the bank's theories when the door opened. And who walked in was Patricia. I restrained the foolish impulse to grab her and shout, "I love you," by looking bored and saying, "Hello."
"Hello, Mr. Rhodes. I guess I should have called for an appointment."
"Oh, now look, first off, you must call me Richard, because I'm going to call you Pat. I'm so glad you came in to see me, Pat. Let's go down to the hunt room and talk things over, shall we?"
"After a while, if you want to. It sounds charming, but I want to talk to you here alone first."
Okay. What should we talk about?"
"Mr. Rogue, Richard."
"Thank you."
"I know this sounds dramatic, but there have been two attempts made on my life in the past 3 weeks."
"Well, why would anybody want to harm you?"
"I don't know. I really don't. There's no reason that I can think of."
Well, you poor kid. Where did these attempts on your life take place?"
"At our summer place, up on Lake Tecumseh."
"Oh, and there's nobody up there with any motive for wanting you out of the way?"
"Nobody." "I don't know whether you've ever been to Lake Tecumseh or not. It's a small resort, just a few families have cabins
Pat,
there."
Maybe you better start from the beginning. You know, I don't really know much about you. Give me the whole story, will you?"
"All right. You already know my name. It's Pat Flynn. My father was Michael Flynn, the attorney."
"Yes, I knew of him, of course."
"Mother was much younger than Dad. About a year after he died, she married Herbert Lewis, the British artist. He was a widower. He had a daughter, Diane, just my age. She's a lovely girl, very British, English, finishing school, and a wonderful musical education. We're the best of friends. She got married about 3 months ago to John Anderson, a boy I've known since he was about 10. They're very happy, and we were all up the lake together."
"All staying in the same cottage?"
"Yes. Well, it isn't exactly a cottage. We all call it that, but it's really rather a large house."
"Okay. Now, tell me about the attempts on your life. How'd they happen?"
"Well, about 3 weeks ago, I got up earlier than the rest of the family. I often do. I went down to the lake for a dip. I'm a pretty good swimmer, and I headed right out to the island in the middle of the lake. I heard a bullet whistle past my head. I dove underwater and swam back toward the shore as long as I could hold my breath. Then I came up. I heard another bullet hit the water not a foot from me. I was frightened to death. I stayed underwater as much as I could until I saw Mother and John coming down for their morning dip. And I swam in and joined them."
"Did you tell them about it?"
"No. I was afraid they'd laugh at me."
"There was another attempt later?"
"Yes. I always have a glass of milk in my room at night. And one night, for no reason at all, I gave it to my cat, Cynthia. And Cynthia died. She had convulsions and died. The veterinary said she'd been poisoned. Somebody tried to poison me.
Look, baby, I think it's about time you're telling somebody about this. There's no future in being murdered, you know. That poisoned milk makes it look like an inside job, doesn't it?
I don't see how it could be anyone in the house, Mr. Rogue. There's only the family and...
No servants?
Only Mary, the cook, and... Well, she's like a mother. She wouldn't want to hurt me. Oh, Richard, I'm scared. I'm supposed to go back up to the lake tomorrow, and I know that the next time, they're going to succeed in killing me.
What do you want me to do?
I want you to come up with me as a house guest. No one will know you're an investigator. And Mr. Rowe...
Yes, Pat?
You can protect me.
We'll continue our story in just a moment. First, the three essentials of attractive, healthy-looking hair are 1, cleanliness, 2, manageability, and 3, a fresh, clean fragrance. Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo does all 3 for your hair. It's mild yet efficient shampoo. It cleanses the hair thoroughly of dust, dirt, perspiration, and other unpleasant scalp odors, leaves the hair smelling fresh and clean. Then Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo is made from mild coconut and pure vegetable oils. You can use it as often as you like, and it will never leave your hair dry or harsh feeling, but always soft and manageable. It makes your hair easier to comb and easier to keep combed. For clean, fragrant hair that's easy to manage, use Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo regularly. Next time at your barber or beauty shop, ask for a professional application of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo, or buy an economical bottle at your drug or toilet goods counter. 6 full ounces, 50 cents. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
I couldn't understand why anybody would want to deprive this ugly old world of Patricia Flynn's beauty. But she was convinced that somebody was trying to promote her to a better land than this, so I accepted her invitation to be a house guest at her family's 18-room cabin on Lake Tecumseh. I'd like to be Uncle Tom in a cabin like that. The living room was a little smaller than the Los Angeles Union Station, but it was much more comfortable. There was a fireplace at each end of it about the size of the entrance to the Hudson Tube. And the room was done in rustic furniture with down cushions. Every place you looked at the walls, you either got an inquisitive look from a defunct moose or a cold stare from a mounted fish. Ah, if this was roughing it, I gave up my scouting too early. The first evening, I sat around and talked with Pat's mother, who looked 30, and her stepsister, Diane, who looked dandy, and John Anderson, who looked like John Anderson. John was Diane's husband.
We're so happy that you could come up with Patricia, Mr. Rogue. She hasn't been enjoying herself this summer for some reason.
She seems so depressed.
Well, girls with her look should never be depressed.
If I weren't Patricia's mother, I'd think she was in love. She has all the symptoms.
Are you the cause of all this, Rogue?
Well, I hope so, but I doubt it. It's an interesting thought.
Where is Pat?
She went out for a walk. Down around the lake, I suppose.
Oh, well, perhaps we're keeping you, Mr. Rogue. The moon's shining, you know. Very romantic out by the lake.
Oh, I think if she had wanted me to go with her, she would have asked me.
You don't know women, Mr. Rogue. They're very subtle.
It's really a lovely night.
Come on, Diane. Let's take a walk and show Mr. Rogue around the place a little bit, huh?
No, you and Mr. Rogue go ahead, John. I'm going to stay in tonight. I've had the sniffles all day. I don't think I should be out in the night air.
You'd better slip a coat on over your sweater if you go out, Mr. Rogue. Gets pretty chilly up here nights.
Well, how about it, Rogue? Shall we take a look around?
Well, yes. Certainly, I'd like to take a look around this place. Sure I'm not putting you out?
Oh, not at all. I usually take a stroll before turning in. Come on.
Okay, if you ladies will excuse us.
Of course.
I'll see you at breakfast, Mr. Rogue. I'll probably retire before you return. It's so nice having you here.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
We live very quietly here on the lake, Rogue. I'm afraid you might find it a little dull.
Oh, I could use a little quiet.
Have you known Pat long?
Quite a while. She's a grand girl, isn't she?
No, one of the best. Strange kid, though. I think she's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. She has something on her mind lately, though. Doesn't seem to be quite her old carefree self.
You've noticed it too, huh? Well, she was very close to her father, you know. Hasn't been too sharp since his death. I'm kind of worried about her.
You think that's what she's brooding about? Her father's death?
I can't figure her lately. She's changed completely. Yeah, look at her down there by the side of the lake. All alone, as usual.
Suppose she would resent it if we joined her?
Well, we can try and see.
Hey, Pat, you receiving callers this evening?
I'm waiting for them. Come on over.
Well, you look mighty beautiful sitting out there in the moonlight.
That remark has my enthusiastic approval. Aren't you cold out here with no wrap, Patty?
No, it's nice out here. I like the breeze. Have a seat on the sand, Mr. Rhodes.
Well, thanks. Oh, brother, this is the life. Brings out the Davy Crockett in me. Tell me, does the place come equipped with a canoe?
Canoe, speedboat, rowboat, take your choice.
Personally, I prefer the speedboat.
These both hands-free.
Yo, you and your elephant's memory.
John used to make mad love to me out there on that lake, Mr. Rogue. Before he was married, of course.
Yeah, well, that was puppy love. Pat soon tired of me.
What's the program for tomorrow, Pat?
Want to go riding?
Sure.
6 o'clock, then, at the stables.
6 o'clock in the morning? Will the horses be awake?
No, they go to bed early. What are you looking for, Rogue?
Oh, my cigarettes. I guess I left them in my coat. Can you spare one?
I didn't bring any with me.
Did you, Pat?
You know I don't smoke.
Well, I'm an awful slave. Looks like I'm going to have to go get them. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay, we'll be here.
I didn't know Handsome John well enough to call him a liar, but I did know he had cigarettes in his pocket. It was hard for me to believe that a guy living in all that luxury would begrudge a house guest a cigarette for financial reasons. So I had to assume that he wanted to be alone with Pat. I felt as unnecessary as a laugh at a funeral as I walked back up to the house. The French doors into the living room were open and I headed for them. I wasn't making any noise, walking in the sand. And I stopped in embarrassment when I heard the conversation which was in progress in the room between Diane and Patricia's mother.
I tell you, I'm not going to put up with this much longer. The way Pat throws herself at John is sickening.
John's old enough to take care of himself, I believe, Diane.
She's doing everything she can to cause trouble between John and me. Everything. She hates me for marrying John.
Yes, I believe she's still in love with John. She always has been. And if she hadn't been away at school when you met John and married him...
Please, don't you dare say that again. Ever.
It's the truth. If it hadn't been for you, John and Pat would be married, as they always planned to be.
If she doesn't leave John alone, something terrible is going to happen to her. I love John. He's mine. You hate me for marrying John.
No, I don't hate you, Diane. But I'm her mother. I want my daughter to be happy again. And I'll do anything to bring her happiness back to her.
You can't take John away from me. I'm going to have a talk with him now. We're leaving here in the morning.
When Diane left that room, you could feel the hate radiating from her like heat from a depot stove. She walked directly toward the spot where I was standing, and I ducked back into the shrubbery. I followed her as she headed for the couple on the beach, and I was only a few feet behind her when she stopped. Pat and John were knee-deep in a conversation that was a tone lower than the last note of A Sleep in the Deep. Diane listened. So did I.
We have to do something about this, John. We can't go on this way. If you don't tell her you want a divorce,
I don't want a divorce, Pat. Now, that's final. I'm not going to let the fact that you fancy yourself in love with me ruin my whole life.
Think it over tonight, darling. Meet me on the island at 6 tomorrow morning. You'd better go in.
All right. I'll meet you in the morning, Pat, but...
Go in, John. I love you.
This group of lovely people was as full of potential drama as a little theater on opening night. I followed Diane back into the house, walked noisily in the front door, and said goodnight. I thought I heard somebody enter and leave my room while I was under the shower, but there was nothing much I could do about it. The room was empty when I re-entered it,
And I helped myself to a drink of water from the thermos on the night table. The water tasted funny. As I hit the pillow, I knew what it was. I went out like a match in a bucket of water. And when I opened my eyes, I was on cloud 8. Ugor was looking me over, and that little dame was there.
He's opening his eyes, Ugor.
Hey, Chiefy, what happened? No bump on your head.
Oh, never mind. What's that girl doing here?
Tell him, Ugor. Ask him now.
If you're going to ask me for permission to get married, the answer is no.
Yeah, but Chiefy, don't you think it's about time you and I settled down? Don't you get tired of getting hit on the head?
Look, Ugor, you've got all you can do to take care of your job as my alter ego without taking on any more responsibilities.
But, Mr. Rogue, I won't be any trouble. I can...
Honey, now look, Rogie. I ask you man to man.
Man to man? Anything you ask me is spook to man, Ugor. You're nothing but a figment of my imagination.
What does that mean, Ugor?
He's a little off his trolley right now. Now look, Chiefy, this is no time to be making a decision which will affect the entire lives of three people. You're not clear in the head.
Did it ever occur to you that if I was clear in my head, I wouldn't be here on Cloud 8 talking to you and that Lilliputian Lana Turner? This Cloud 8 is strictly non-coeducational. Now, you throw her out of here.
Push him over the side, Ugor. Come on, I'll help you.
Oh, no. No. No, I have to rest a while. Go away.
Come on, Ugor. Help me. He's mean.
All right. Over you go, Chiefy.
No. No. Cut it out. Ooh, I'll strangle you with your own beard, Ugor. Stop pushing.
He's a bad man, Ugor.
Yes, he is. So long, Rogie.
When I woke up, the sun was high in the heavens. My head felt like a busy blacksmith's anvil, and my tongue was made of mink. I leaped out of bed like a startled fawn and, I sat back down fast. I dressed without lowering my head and made a belated appearance at the breakfast table. Pat and her mother were having breakfast. John came in a few minutes after me. He didn't look well either.
Good morning, John. Where's Diane?
I don't know. We had a bit of a disagreement last night. She slept in the guest room and... I just looked in. She wasn't there.
She probably went for a morning dip.
Oh. Have you been in yet this morning, Pat?
Not me. I slept. I couldn't wake up this morning.
Whatever happened to our horseback ride, Pat?
Oh, did you get up for it?
Oh, me? Oh, no. No, I slept right straight through. As a matter of fact, I never slept so well in my life.
Yeah, that goes for me, too. And I feel terrible this morning.
Well, so do I. I feel dopey.
How about a canoe ride after breakfast, Pat? It'll do us both good.
Maybe that's what I need.
Do I look as stupid as I feel?
I don't know what you mean. You look kind of sleepy. You look like I feel.
Somebody doped me last night, Pat.
They did. Are you sure?
Honey... I know when I'd been slipped a tricky Mickey. Last night was one of those times. Who would have wanted me out of the way last night?
I don't know. I'm sure somebody doped me last night, too, Richard. It's almost as if some crazy person were hiding there. Maybe we should call the police.
Look, chicken, that stepsister of yours is kind of burned with you.
Diane?
Now, don't look so surprised. You know it. I happened to overhear a little conversation between Diane and your mother last night. Diane lifted your boyfriend, didn't she?
Yes.
You were asking for trouble, Pat, fighting back like that. I really... Hey.
What's the matter?
What's that over there?
Oh. Oh, Richard.
Don't look.
It's Diane, isn't it?
Yes.
That's my white bathing suit. She's wearing my bathing suit.
She's dead, Pat. Somebody shot her.
Oh, no. Richard, whoever shot her thought they were shooting me.
We'll return to our story in just a moment. First, a word to the ladies. You know how often your hair is caught in the spotlight of the summer sun. Be sure your hair meets the test. By shampooing regularly with Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo, you can be sure the sun will not reveal your hair as dry or harsh looking. That's because Fitch's saponified shampoo is made from mild coconut and pure vegetable oils. It makes your hair ever so soft and manageable, even right after you shampoo it. And ladies, here's a special feature you'll appreciate. Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo contains its own special patented rinsing agent. No special after rinse is required, for the rinsing agent works right with the plain rinse water to get your hair sparkling clean. Fitch's saponified shampoo brings out all the gleaming natural highlights of your hair and leaves it with a satiny texture that's beautiful to look at, easy to arrange. Remember always to ask for Fitch, F-I-T-C-H. Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo. Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Well, Pat Flynn had proved her point. Her half-sister Diane was lying there on the beach, dead. Shot while swimming in Lake Tecumseh, wearing Pat's white satin swimsuit. I stood over Diane's body while Pat ran screaming hysterically up to the house to get John. They were back in a few minutes, and the three of us stood looking down at the dead girl.
Oh, darling.
Here, John, take it easy, old man.
Let go of me, Rogue. Let go of me.
I know how you feel, John.
Oh, you know how I feel. Have you ever loved anybody so much you couldn't get your breath? Then had to murder. You know how I feel. How could you know?
John, please.
Get away from me, Pat. Do you hear? This is all your fault. If you hadn't been such a stupid little fool, she wouldn't be dead.
Now take it easy, John. You don't know what you're saying.
How could you blame me, John? Whoever killed her thought they were shooting me.
I wish they had. You were the cause of all the trouble. You've hated her ever since we were married. You think she stole me from you. How could you think that? You were never anything to me.
Now, look. We'd better get up to the house. The police have to be called. This is murder, you know.
You take care of that, will you, Rogue?
Of course. You better come with me, John.
No. I'll stay here with Diane. But take Pat with you. Don't leave her out here with me. With us.
I'll go, John. I wish you wouldn't hate me. John.
Get back to the house.
Come on, Pat.
And when the police get here, Rogue, I have something to tell them. Bring them right out here to me.
All right. All right, John. Oh, this is a horrible thing, Pat. Tell me, how did your mother react to the news of her stepdaughter's murder?
She didn't say anything. She just said, oh, Richard, you don't think mother...
I don't know. It looks like everybody in the house was dope last night but your mother.
Oh, couldn't have been mother. She wouldn't want to hurt me.
You're overlooking the fact that whoever shot Diane might have known just who was wearing that white bathing suit, aren't you?
Oh, no. It couldn't have been mother. It was someone trying to kill me.
That's just a theory. Go call the police. Tell them to come up here. I'm going to have a talk with your mother. As soon as Pat was out of the way, I ran up the stairs to my room. I took the stopper out of the thermos and sniffed the water in it. There had been chloral in that water. I knew the pungent smell of it. I visited Pat's bedroom and John's and sampled the odor of the water at their bedsides. It was a very interesting experiment. I headed for the bedroom occupied by Pat's mother and hesitated outside the door. There was the odor of burning cloth. I opened the door and walked in. She was on her knees in front of the fireplace, trying to burn a scanty red swimsuit, a damp one.
What do you mean, coming into my bedroom, Mr. Rogue?
Your stepdaughter, Diane, has been murdered, and I'm investigating the circumstances. Give me that bathing suit. Give it here.
No, I won't.
I'm sorry. I'll have to take it, then. You know, destroying evidence is bad business. Give it here.
I killed her. I killed Diane, Mr. Rogue.
You did? Why?
She was ruining my daughter's life. I killed her this morning.
Where does the bathing suit enter into it? Why were you trying to destroy it?
I didn't want the police to know that I'd been in the lake this morning.
Oh, I see. Well?
The police are... Mother, what are you doing with that swimsuit?
That I...
Whose is it?
It was Diane.
You might as well face it, Pat. Your mother killed Diane. She just confessed to me. She was burning that suit to keep the police from finding out that she'd been in swimming this morning.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Look at that suit. Look at the size of it. Mother could no more get into that,
Pat.
No. No, she couldn't, could she? But you could, Pat. And if
I did it. I killed her. Pat, don't say anything.
The water on my nightstand was drugged last night, Pat. Chloral. So was John's. But yours wasn't. And you shot Diane, didn't you?
No. Pat, don't answer him. I shot her. I hated her.
She was no good, Mother. I did it. I killed her. I saw her sneaking around listening to what John and I were saying last night. Spying on us. I gave her something to listen to. I made a date to meet John on the island at 6 o'clock this morning. I knew what she'd do. I knew.
Oh, Pat. Pat, how could you do it?
I'm glad I did it. If I can't have John, I'd just as soon be dead. I'm only sorry I wasn't a little more clever.
Pat, dear, we'll get the best attorney.
No, not for me. Oh, bless your heart. That was a wonderful try he made for me.
Mommy, I love you.
The police arrived a few minutes later, and Pat told them everything. Her diary was admitted as evidence at her trial. Every day since the marriage of John and Diane, Pat had planned Diane's death. The phony attempts on her life that she told me about were part of the buildup. There could be no doubt about the fact that Pat's mind had given away under the deadly poison of jealousy and hate. She was found not guilty by reason of insanity and was committed to an institution. All on account of jealousy. Oh, well, jealousy is a very strange thing. You drive yourself daffy trying to prove something that you hope isn't true. Because if it is, you're going to drive yourself crazy trying to convince yourself that it wasn't important anyway. You know what I mean. This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Lee Engelbach produced and directed. Next week, we have a story for you about a red-headed stranger, a young wife, and... something different. A murder. Be with us then, will you? Thanks for listening, and now here's Jim Doyle.
Be sure to tune in again next week, same time, same station, when you will again hear Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Laugh a while, let a song be your style, use Fitch Shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, use Fitch Shampoo.
After and between Fitch shampoos, you can keep your hair shining and manageable by using a few drops of Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic every day. Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic is not sticky or greasy, yet it gives your hair that well-groomed look.
In his office.
Oh, thanks, Eddie. Probably wants to give me a bonus on that last yarn I turned in for the sheep.
Who knows what he wants, including him. Walk you to the door?
Yeah, do that. Some young cub reporter might be waiting to take a bite out of me in transit.
What are you working on for the old man, Harkins? Something hot?
Big secret stuff. No can talk.
Not even to me. I'm working here, you know.
You never know it. See you later, Ed. Hi, boss.
Oh, come in, Harkins. I got an assignment for you.
Good. Let's have it.
Ever hear of Philo Vance?
Private investigator par excellence? Sure, I've heard of him.
Get an interview on him. Something about the cases he's worked on. Ought to make a good feature. Maybe we'll run it as a series on Sundays. That's all.
Just like that, I'm to get a story out of Vance. Hmm? My, you know he never talks to reporters.
So don't be a reporter. Be a society gal. Be somebody in trouble. Be anybody. Nobody said you had to be a reporter.
No, that's right. Nobody did. A lot of people have told me I'm not a reporter. But you wouldn't be one of them, would you, Mike?
I might one of these days. Call me and let me know how you make out.
Okay, Mike. By the way, that yarn I was on this morning, nothing doing on it. NGNS. No story.
What one's that?
That thing about the concert pianist, Lillian White, inheriting $500,000. She denies it.
She denies it, so there's no story? Maybe I should have sent Henderson.
Wait a minute, Mike. Keep your top down. Did dig up something on the White gal. Found out she was once married to a man named Joe McGuff. Mean anything?
Not to me. Did you knock out what you have?
Yeah, here it is on this paper. Only it isn't much, and you can't use it. But here it is, such as it is. Only I'm telling you now, it's no yarn, it's no nothing.
Well, if you got nothing except that she was married to a guy named Joe McGuff, it sure is no story. Okay, leave it and I'll look it over. Go on now. See what you can find out from Philo Vance.
I'm on my way. Only from what I've heard of him, I've got an idea he'll find out more about me than I will about him.
Keep moving! Keep moving there! Keep moving! Hey, you, what's the idea of parking in the middle of a busy street? Move that cab out of there before I give you a ticket.
Hey, officer. Officer, I gotta talk to you. Come here, please. Hurry.
Okay, what's with you in that taxi?
Officer, huh? Look in the back of my cab. There's a girl there. I picked her up in front of the bulletin office 10 minutes ago.
What about it?
She's dead. She's been murdered. There's a knife in her heart.
That's the story, Vance. All of it. The girl was a reporter on the Bulletin, and she was on her way to interview you when she was murdered.
Interview me? That sounds like a very interesting case, Markham.
Not to me, it doesn't. If anybody was murdered because they were on their way to interview you, Vance, murder's getting a little too close to home.
Perhaps we'll move our home then, Ellen. What does the district attorney think about that?
I'm not thinking about anything, Vance, except this girl's murder and the fact that she was on her way here when she was killed. Generally, you're not concerned with the murder until after it happened.
That's true, of course. But before I do anything on the girl's murder, I think it might be an idea to quiet my secretary's fear for my safety. Ellen, up until now, I've done a pretty good job of taking care of myself, haven't I?
Yes, Vance, you have. But it only takes one mistake to bring your average all the way down to zero.
Well, I'll try not to make that mistake. Come on, Markham, let's get going. We'll make the newspaper office our first stop. I don't know a better place to pick up some news.
Eddie, listen to me. Somebody murdered one of our staff. Reporters have solved crimes before, but this one we've got to solve.
I'd like to get my mitts on whoever knocked off Harkins, Mike. She was one of the best newspaper men I've ever worked with.
Well, go on, get going, Eddie. There must be some connection with her death and the story she was working on.
Well, you'd know what yarn you gave her, Mike. What was she on?
Nothing at the moment. Nothing but a straight assignment. An interview with Philo Vance.
What was she working on before?
Nothing.
That item about a concert pianist named Lillian White inheriting some money. Nothing important.
Nothing, except that you took that story and put it on page one. What a nice little job you made of it, too. Headline, is this the story that caused the death of the Bulletin reporter? Subhead, who is this mysterious Joe McGow? Nut.
McGuff.
G-O-U-G-H is McGow.
All right, Eddie, have it your way, only don't be bitter. That yarn treated just that way will be on page one of every paper in the country by morning. They'll all handle the story the same way. It's human interest.
Story that wasn't even a story becomes front page news. Only it cost a reporter's life. Maybe I'll turn in my press card.
I know how you feel, Eddie, but forget it. Now listen. Hop out to the house where the taxi driver lives. The one that picked up Harkins in front of our building. Get him to say something. Whether he saw anybody get in the cab when it stopped for a light. Anything.
Okay, Mike, I'm on my way. Only if the cab driver knew anything, he'd have told the cops. And Riley at headquarters said he keeps insisting he didn't see anyone get into the cab after Harkins got in.
The cops let him go, Eddie. He's home now. You got the address?
Sure, Riley gave it to me.
Well, get on your horse and see what you can find out.
Okay. Well, you don't expect me to die just to put my story on the front page.
Hi, Eddie.
Hey, what is this? Every newspaper man in town waiting to see that taxi driver?
Looks like it, don't it? We can't get in, though, Eddie. Cops have been there since I got here.
Flash your press card?
I could have left it home. Sergeant Heath's in charge.
Heath?
Yeah.
Heath's on homicide. What's he doing here?
Well, Harkins' girl's death wasn't any accident, you know. And if you really want to know what Heath is doing, ask him yourself. Here he comes out the door now. Hey, Heath! What'd he say, huh? Did you get anything on it?
All right, shut up. Shut up, all of you.
Hey, Heath, all we want to know is whether that cab driver talked. Did he say he saw anybody get in his cab while he was driving the girl?
Yeah, what'd you get from him?
I said shut up, and I mean it. The cab driver didn't talk. Much more, he ain't gonna talk, now or never, to nobody. He's dead.
What?
Yeah, killed the same way as the girl was. We don't know who knocked him off, either.
Hello?
Miss Lillian White?
Yes?
Long distance is calling. I have your party, sir. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Lil?
Yes, who is this?
This is Joe, Lil. Your darling husband. Remember me?
Joe, where are you? What do you want?
It don't make hardly any difference where I am. And what I want? Well, that don't make hardly any difference either. I just seen the papers.
But, Joe... Joe, I don't know how that reporter found out that you were my husband. I didn't tell her.
No, I don't suppose you would, hardly. But she found out. Only I don't care about that. I care about $500,000 you inherited, according to the story. I want in on that, though. I'm entitled to it. I'm still married to you. Remember, kid?
Joe, that story isn't true.
Maybe. Maybe not. Anyhow, I'm hopping a plane in a few minutes, and I'll be in to see you in a couple of hours. Just don't be too surprised when I walk in. I hardly want to surprise you, honey. Hardly.
City room's on the 8th floor, Jenny.
Thank you. Well, we're finally on the way to the bulletin office, Vance. Sorry we were held up.
That taxi driver's death didn't help us any, Markham. Apparently, the same person killed Miss Harkins. Find the one murderer, and you solve two murders.
Sounds like bargain day. You know why the taxi driver was killed?
I think so. And I think I know why Miss Harkins was killed, too.
Well, I'd say she was killed because of a story she was working on. Someone didn't want that story in print, and if that's true, when we see her editor, we'll find out what she was working on, and we'll have our suspect.
The general idea is a possibility. The cab driver's death is pretty easily explained. He probably did see someone in his cab with Miss Harkins, didn't tell the police, but instead figured he'd try a little blackmail.
Oh, when will people learn, I wonder?
He won't learn anything anymore, I'm afraid. Well, here's the 8th floor.
City room straight ahead.
Right. You know, Vance, I think this case is going to give us trouble. I just have that feeling.
All cases give us trouble, Markham. In every case we ever work on, somebody has committed a murder they've thought out pretty carefully. In their intelligence lies the extent of the trouble they cause us. And I'm sure our murderer this time isn't stupid.
And my hunch was correct.
Probably. We'll know very shortly, as soon as we know what story Miss Hawkins was going to print. Come on in with me. I beg your pardon.
Yes, what is it?
I'm Philo Vance. This is District Attorney Markham.
How are you?
Oh, hello. Hello, both of you.
I'm Eddie Henderson. Can I help you, Vance?
Perhaps. I'd like to see the city editor. Where do I find him?
Oh, in that office back there. The first one on your right. Walk right in where it says private. Everyone else does.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, which desk was Miss Harkins?
That one there. First one you see. Why?
I don't imagine we have to explain why, do we, Mr. Henderson?
Oh, no. Of course not. I'm sorry. Well, I gotta get this copy to the boy. Excuse me.
Why didn't you tell him why we wanted to see Miss Harkins' desk, Markham?
A very complicated reason, Vance. You didn't tell me why we wanted to see
it. Well, here it is. Now, let me see. Every newspaper writer I ever knew kept a carbon of every piece he wrote, generally in the top drawer.
Miss Harkins was no exception, apparently. There are her carbons.
We're going to take a look at the last few, just for luck. Nothing on the first one except a note to interview me. We knew about that.
Yes, of course.
This one? Lillian White denied today that she had inherited $500,000. Although the bulletin learned from authoritative sources that she had. This White, famous concert pianist, was the wife of Joe McGuff. You hear of him, Markham?
McGuff? How do you spell it, Vance?
M-C-G-U-F-F. Know him?
I'm not sure.
Well, Markham, that's the unfinished story every paper in America carried as the last item Miss Harkins wrote.
That's the story her killer didn't want finished, I imagine, eh?
Perhaps. Then again, perhaps not. I'll just borrow this carbon. Now let's see our friend, the city editor.
His name is Abbott. Mike Abbott. Though that doesn't tell us anything, of course.
It isn't his name I expect will tell us anything. I'm hoping that he will.
Hello, Miss White.
Eddie. Eddie, what are you doing in my apartment?
Talking to you. I don't know why I'm bothering to. I've done a lot for you in the bulletin, Lillian. But I didn't like what you did to pay me off.
Please, Eddie, don't I have enough trouble now? I don't even know what you're talking about.
Don't you? It wouldn't be that you wanted to make sure Myrna Harkins never got any more information about you, would it? And that you killed her.
I killed her? Who sent it to me with that made-up story about an inheritance that I never got? Couldn't have been anybody but you.
Doesn't matter where the paper got the tip that sent Harkins here. What does matter to me is that you wouldn't want any information about your husband, this Joe McGuff, to get out. See, I just got finished checking, and I found out the rackets he's been running.
Get out of here, Eddie. Get out of here before I send for someone to throw you out.
Who are you going to send for, Joe? And what are you going to tell him? And aren't you afraid I've got something to tell him, too?
This is District Attorney Markham. The bulletin murder case began when Myrna Harkins, bulletin reporter, was found stabbed to death in a cab. Philo Vance visited the bulletin office where he talked to Eddie Henderson, reporter, and Mike Abbott, editor. Neither could throw any light on the murder, but the police believe that a story Miss Harkins was writing, and which was later published unfinished, is a clue. It concerns a concert pianist named Lillian White and her secret and up till now missing husband, Joe McGuff. Vance was on his way to Miss White's apartment when I last saw him. He should be there in a few minutes.
What's the matter, Lily? You don't seem hardly glad to see me at all, hardly.
Go away, Joe. Go back where you came from.
I hopped the plane just to look at you, Lily. So stop playing that piano. I want to look at you. And that $500,000.
There is no $500,000, Joe. I don't know where the newspaper ever thought I inherited anything. I didn't. Believe me, I didn't.
Maybe not. Anyhow, I'm going to stick around town here to make sure. Hey, that newspaper dame that wrote that story. She's the one got herself killed. That wouldn't hardly be anything you did, Lily.
Joe, you don't know what you're saying.
No? Maybe not. Hey, Lil, I've been away a couple of years. I was coming back about this time anyhow to take care of a guy. You wouldn't hardly know nobody named Gregory, would you? Bill Gregory?
No. No, I never heard of him, and I wish I'd never heard of you.
I like you too, Lily Lady. Only I don't hardly like the way you talk to me. Somebody calling on you, Lily?
I don't know. I'm not expecting anyone. Might be the police. They've been here almost all the time since that story appeared.
Okay, Lily, if it's the cops, I'll get out the back way. I gotta take care of you. And that Gregory guy. Only it's two different ways of taking care. Be seeing you, Lily.
I'm coming. Just a moment. Yes?
Miss White, I'm Philo Vance. May I come in?
Yes. Yes, of course.
Your company left in a hurry, I presume. I didn't scare him off, did I?
How did you know there'd been somebody here?
Oh, please, Miss White. Don't expect any Sherlock Holmes explanation such as a rubber heel mark on your rug or a burning cigar left carelessly behind. I merely heard voices from outside. Oh, magnificent piano, this.
What do you want, Mr. Vance?
Well, under any other circumstances, I'd want to hear you play. Right at the moment, I'd like to know about a man named Joe McGuff.
If the papers printed about him was true, he's my husband.
McGuff, eh? M-C-G-O-U-G-H?
Yes.
Then the papers had the spelling right. I wondered. By the way, it wasn't he who was here a little while back, was it?
Yes, it was. He left the back way. He thought you might be the police.
Oh. What's his allergy to police, Miss White?
I don't know what he's been doing. He's been away for 5 years. All I do know is that right now he's looking for a man named Gregory.
He's been away 5 years and Miss Hawkins found out about you and him?
He came to interview me when I was out. My maid let her in and she was alone here in the apartment. She might have come across my marriage license, correspondence, anything.
They did say she was a good reporter. Miss White, have you any idea where I can see Joe McGuff?
No. No, I don't.
I haven't either. But I'll find him. You may be unhappy to learn. I think that will be all, Miss Deering. My notes are up to date on the bulletin murder, I believe. Read me the last item again, will you please?
Certainly, Vance. With the knowledge of the above facts, detailed in chronological order, it is very evident to me who murdered Myrna Hawkins, and as a consequence, Arthur Allen, the taxi driver. Well, that's it, Vance. Now tell me, who was it?
Who it was, Allen, is secondary in this case to why it was. Wait until Markham gets here, which should be momentarily, and I'll tell you both at the same time.
You could dictate it, and then I'll promise not to even look at it until the district attorney gets here.
Oh, Allen.
I'll wait for Markham.
Hello, you two. I am right on schedule.
Practically on cue. And I'm glad you're here.
Really? Well, that's very complimentary. Vance, I've got some information. Joe McGuff is at the Rex Hotel. Heath tracked him down, only McGuff doesn't know that.
Good, Markham. That's really good news. It will postpone my announcement, however. I'm going to see Mr. McGuff.
Vance, you promised.
Yes, I did, Ellen, but I told you the fascinating part of this case was why Miss Hawkins was killed. That's the part I don't know either. But it's the part I'm going to find out now.
I could kick you out of here, Vance. You could hardly blame me for that, could you? Hardly.
No, I couldn't. You don't seem surprised that I found you, Mr. McGuff.
I heard of you, Vance. I ain't surprised at nothing you do.
Then it won't disturb you too much to know that I can find a certain man named Gregory for you.
Gregory. You know where he is?
I think so.
Maybe you're thinking ain't so good. Maybe you talk faster than you know. What does he look like?
About 45, gray hair parted on the side. Big fellow, big hand.
And big bluff. Okay, Vance, you know him. Where is he?
First, what do you have against Mr. Gregory?
A beef, that's what I have. And he knows I got that beef. And he knows that one day I was going to come and take it out on him. The hard way.
So he's afraid of you?
He's been afraid of me for 5 years, ever since he crossed me. And every day of those 5 years, he ain't hardly slept, hardly, on a corner he knew I'd get him. You think not?
Hardly. Joe, I'm going to do more than just tell you where Gregory is and what name he's using. I'm going to deliver him to you. How'd you like that?
How'd I like it? With bells on, my coat off, and my sleeves rolled up. That's how I'd like it.
Hello?
Ellen, this is Vance. Is Markham still at the office?
Yes, he's sitting right here, Vance, and so am I, only I'm on pins and needles.
Rather uncomfortable, I imagine.
Vance, I've got to know who killed Myrna Harkins and why. But I'll settle for one thing now. Were the police right in their original premise that the story about Miss White's inheritance was the reason Miss Harkins was murdered?
You mean, was Miss Harkins killed to prevent that story from being printed?
Yes.
Mm-mm. We've never been more wrong in our lives. That murder was committed in order to make certain that that story appeared. Good evening, Mr. Abbott.
What? Oh, hello, Vance.
Where's your star reporter, Mr. Abbott? Mr. Eddie Henderson, I believe his name is.
He's out in the city room. You want him?
Yes, as soon as I check some facts with you.
Yeah? Check away.
Mr. Abbott, Myrna Harkins' last story would never have been printed if she hadn't been murdered. Isn't that so?
You mean it was no story the way she wrote it? That's right.
Suppose it was important to somebody that that story appear not only in your paper, but nationally. It would be impossible unless the person who wrote it suddenly became important. You know, Abbott,
I think...
Oh, come in, Henderson. We were talking about you a while ago. Sergeant Heath.
Yeah, Vance?
Please come in with Mr. Henderson and stay close to him, will you?
Sure, Vance. Anything you say. Come on, Henderson. Vance wants you.
What do you want with me, Vance?
Eddie, Mr. Vance thinks you had something to do with Myrna Harkin's death.
He does? Well, that night.
Now, don't get tough with Vance or I'll wrap you one.
Thank you, Sergeant.
No mention.
Henderson, you knew nobody would print the Lillian White inheritance story the way she wrote it. So you killed her to make sure it would appear. Take him downtown, Heath.
Sure, Vance. Come along, you.
Get your hands off me, you big ape. I never killed anybody.
Come on.
Nobody's gonna
come on. I'll meet you. I'll take care of this character, Vance. Don't worry.
Thank you.
Don't miss.
Well, Henderson's a murderer. I can't believe it.
Then don't try to. Oh, Mr. Gregory,
yeah? I mean, who?
Don't bother with the deception, my friend. I know your name is Gregory, and I know you killed Myrna Harkins. That little byplay with Henderson just now is to throw you off your guard so you'd answer to the name of Gregory.
What does that prove?
A lot of things.
You said whoever killed Harkins did it so her story would get in the paper. Well, I'm the editor. I could use that story if I'd wanted to. And what's this Mr. Gregory business about?
You're Gregory, all right. I described you to Joe McGuff.
McGuff?
That's right. But it's right that you could have published Miss Harkins' story in your own paper. But that wasn't any good. You had to have a story that would break nationally, so no matter where McGuff was, he'd see it and come back here.
I wanted him back here, whoever he is?
Most certainly. That was your intention when you first dreamed up the inheritance story for Miss Harkins to work on. You had the whole thing planned then. Let her write the denial. Then you were to kill her, and her last story would then be page one news all over the country. You wanted McGuff back here so you could kill him before he got you. Heath.
Here I am, Vance. Can I take this guy downtown?
Please. One of the lowest murderers I've ever met. Killing an innocent girl just as a means to bring somebody here where he could get his hands on him.
Harkins innocent? That's how much you know. She knew all about me. The same things that McGuff knew. She's been blackmailing me for years. Hey, Vance. Vance, tell me. I gotta know something. Where did I make my mistake?
You were too good a newspaper man, Gregory. Too good a newspaper man. But not too good a murderer. Well, Ellen, any questions?
Just one, Dan. What pointed to Mr. Abbott, or Gregory, as the murderer?
I'll tell you. When Myrna Harkins wrote the story of Lillian White's alleged inheritance, she spelled McGuff M-C-G-U-F-F.
Yes.
Her editor, who sent her on the story in the first place, knew the correct spelling was M-C-G-O-U-G-H. So he changed her copy accordingly.
Oh, I get it. And actually, he'd have no way of knowing the right spelling unless he knew McGuff.
Correct. He had to change the story to be sure it came to the attention of the right McGuff. Quite simple, isn't it?
It always is after you explain it. Vance, you're so wonderful. You solved this one, and it was a pretty tough package.
Well, let's not discuss packages, Ellen. Let's understand only that this is the end of the Bulletin murder case.
That's it for Case Closed this week. I hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more from Rogues Gallery and Philo Vance at the website, alongside past episodes of this podcast, all the other shows, our Shoutcast stream, and our donate button. That's all found at relicradio.com. Remember, your donations make all of this possible. Got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is greatly appreciated. Thanks as always to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Talk again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.